Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
knife in Texas. It's rather a strange thought. The logo for it is a map of Texas with the state colours and a knife with blood on it. And it's sort of, it's a bit hard to get used to. However, that's the name of a small comic book company up here in Sydney, Australia. And I'm going to do a review of it and talk about the possibility of them addressing the big new world, sort of a new fantasy world, which is actually our real world, which is quantum mechanics. I have to get back to that eventually. Now, I just put everyone in the frame. The idea of this is of podcasts is just for cognitive recall. So it's Sunday, it's now Wednesday, so it's several days since I went to something called a comic convention, and this is where people, Harry Potter, Star Wars, all the alternative to the bare bones reality, children, adults go and they merge, and sort of adult gamers go. It's sort of what you could call fantasy. There's actually a bit of an industry in it. These are people, fandom, people who get involved in watching theatre and sort of get a little bit beyond it and actually live the life. We'll get into the detail a bit more. But there's actually a lot of philosophy and a lot of positive industries and things lurking around in there. It's actually quite interesting. This is really no exception. And really, it's popular culture. It actually is culture, and you can have people who shun all types of cultures or who live totally in their culture, but being able to dip into other cultures, you know, obviously from other countries, but other ideas, mindsets, universes, so to speak. So that was interesting here, and so it was held at the Springwood Civic Centre, a little town sort of on the easterly side of the Blue Mountains, before the Blue Mountains really get up to a giddy height of 1,200 metres, which I think a lot of people's foothills are as high as that. This is around 400 metres, Springwood, and there's a sort of beautiful centre, a beautiful civic centre. It's sort of an ideal public space, and you go up into it and up some stairs into a room, and if you were there on the 14th of July, a Sunday, you would have been greeted by people, given a band, greeted by people in different costumes and stuff like that, and gone up into a room, a comic workshop, a masterclass in comic writing. It's basically, I don't know why they call it masterclasses. It sounds as though it's going to be really good, but it's a class about to give people a mastery. And all the kids, 15 at the most, 6 at the lowest, that grade filed in, and on a horseshoe arrangement with the glass windows going out into the foyer below and the street out behind, filed in, and there, I suppose, these were 30 kids and a presenter from a comic drawing person, and he was going to talk about comics. And in this podcast, I'm going to try and recall some of the things he said, some of the general things he said, and that'll be quite good. Then move on to things that I want to do, or have done, and it sort of fits in, and the big comic challenge, the big fantasy universe, which is our actual universe, which you have to get into. So there is a universe around us, and it's sort of higher order dimensions, and it's, you know, maths that we're not trained up on. It's in there. And it means that all these fantastic things happen. Now, I don't know how the structure goes, but the challenge is there. The road work isn't there. So we had a presenter called Darren. So I've just had a quick look at his website just to reflect it. Knife in Texas really is really surprising how if something doesn't quite make sense, it just doesn't go in. So, you know, I really couldn't understand it when it was first said. But Darren has a company, and it looks to be about four people associated with it. Himself, another artist, and a few other artists. Production thing, a computer. Home in Carrajong, which is sort of the northern part of the Blue Mountains. So the Blue Mountains runs north-south, so it's possibly 300 kilometres long. There's a series of clustered parks. It's actually fairly big and 100 kilometres wide. Possibly about the size of Luxembourg. Yeah, it's not as the size of Holland or one of these big sheep stations out in Australia. Just getting back. I'll give you a bit of Darren's story as he's told it. He was in the Navy. Firstly, he loved to draw all the time. This is his backstory. He was in the Navy, and in the Navy there's a lot of free time. When you're on ships and you draw, one doesn't think of that. One thinks, it's always action. And he was on the ships in the Navy, and he was a Indonesian interpreter. So his job was to speak Indonesian. And so Indonesia is the set of islands to the north of us. So you've got the Australia, which is just cruising along really slowly, moving up from Antarctica at about a centimetre a year. And we're crashing into Indonesia, and Indonesia is a complete intersection of plates going underneath each other, and volcanoes and islands, and it's all exciting stuff, and it's been occupied by seafaring people for a long time, and it's a huge population, 220 million. It's one of the more populous nations on earth. There's sort of Brazil, the United States, that sort of Russia, that type of, and then you get the big ones. So it's got a very large population and stuff like that, and a very beautiful language, in that it was 1947 it got independence. They decided that they'd kickstart the language, and so it's sort of very rational, beautiful, pronounced language. But if you wanted to say two of something, if I wanted to say two chairs, rather than a plural tense, they've got chair, and a whole series of things. So it's a very interestingly structured language. And Darren was an interpreter, and he was medically retired. I'm not quite sure. He was retired, or he left the Navy. And this is his second career, and so you can see the communications. And so there's about, I can see 8 comic publications, and there's a business of teaching comic artistry to schools. I picked up these $300 a session, something a period, to train people and to take a few classes, and the schools get involved, and they produce work, and their work gets bound up in a comic, which is, the school produces a comic and it goes in their school library. This is just from standing around, just saying, look, I like your work, just listening to other people speak. So he's got very much a presentation to children, an education role, and this is what we're the beneficiaries of. One of his education points, sort of steamed in there or rolled in there, is that You just keep on going. You don't rest on your laurels. And he had a small story of how he was in an airplane and sitting next to this US person. And you've got to really understand, US people are sort of like semi-gods. They're almost fantasy people. They're people whose opinions are valued. They live very funny lives. They do very funny things. They're in terms of the comic universe, they're almost gods. It's not gods, it's sort of another world to Australia. So if you tell a story about telling something to a United States person, there's sort of, in instance, your level of credibility is dropped down. You wouldn't say, the United States can do anything. And this is no exception. So this person listened to him, and then years later in the post, he sent his belt buckle. And he had won third place in America, apparently, for shooting. And, of course, that makes immediate sense to Australians. Americans have guns, and they fire them off all the time, and they value people who can shoot. But, however, he got this belt, and, you know, bizarre to me, you know, why you'd have a belt celebrating the fact that you came third place. However, the story was, wear this belt to remember that you can't be complacent. You must keep on pushing on. You taught me that it's just not good enough to go around thinking, well, my life is my achievement, and then wrap it up. You've got to keep on trying. And this is what he did. And again, it's sort of in the comic license. One doesn't know whether that is... Oh, I assume it's all true. It doesn't really matter that it's true. It's, you know, the story has something in it. And lo and behold, the belt... he was wearing the belt, and the belt actually appears in his comics. And he's got about eight classically drawn comics. And books or themes going across, and his thing was to keep on going. And this is something that you saw time and time again throughout the Comic-Con convention. There were people who had lived or worked in normal places as armorers, as geologists and stuff like that, and they've come into this thing with their skill set, bringing it in. And it's very much the structure here, so you can see a skill set here. So that was a general theme. And the other theme was that you have to improve, you have to have done the first iteration. And that was just another theme. So these are some of the things he was giving to the kids. I'm giving it this as not as dramatic as you had to pay attention, and then it came out, and then you said, aha, I'm giving you the unravelled way, sort of the boring way. But you really have to begin and have your first attempt, so your second attempt could be better than it. And this is... in management, it's called cut to the edge. Execution in engineering, it's the concept of prototypes, where you have a series of prototypes. I've talked about this before: concept prototype, research prototype, production prototype, and all times each prototype anticipates the next one. This anticipation of where things are going to go was sort of another theme that you can't have a comic too gory or transgressing social taboos, or you're just going to alienate the market. You're going to alienate your local support network, I would say. So your local school, everyone. There's these areas that if you go into, so if you make it racist or something like that, or all wrong. I just think it's a license for people, for gatekeepers to come in. It's sort of like in a German prison of war camp. You don't stick out, and that type of stuff. That's my my take on it. And then he talked about the various comic universes, a bit of the history, which I found interesting, about how there was a Genesis time in the 60s and 50s, and which is sort of like the post-World War II people, where people were experimenting for the first time, and there's this explosion of creativity, and you have all the comic characters produced. And then in the 1980s, people, marketing people, brought them together with universes. So you brought Spider-Man and someone else together, brought it together. And so you have to, you know, where you're going, you can, don't start off with the universe, you start off with your implementation. You may be thinking of your universe, but you start off your with your implementation, which is a very interesting thing from marketing and other things. So like when I'm building prototypes, I'm building a prototype of such and such device, but it's got its contained themes for its, for a more general anticipation of a more general application. So that really worked for me. Then you've got to work on your product, which is your comic, and your comic has a hero, and there's certain things that you want to do normally, but you have to stop and think and allow the creative process to progress. So there is this idea that the creative progress goes the entire way. You sort of go anticipation, but it doesn't go too fast to avoid creation. This is my interpretation of things. This is not as Darren put. And he said one of the things is that you don't start off by naming your superhero, because then you, that is a creative process at the end, which he says has to go through a period of thought, anticipation of marketing, has it been said before, how people do. That's a sort of a capstone to it all, and you've got to work on the basis. And he just made a thing that you don't know until you see what you've got. And he said, you know, his parents were wanting a girl called Karen, and then he came out, they called him Darren. I don't know whether that's true, but it's sort of a nice way of putting it. Okay, so I'm doing quite well here in terms of my cognitive. I'm not doing well. He said, basically, you've got to have a superhero with limited powers, because if they've got unlimited powers, they're boring. And for me, I think really captures my feeling of speaking to people who are just so full of themselves. They never make mistakes. They've got no, they can do everything much better than you, and they've got much more wealth. That's right. You don't have much to say for them, because you're not perfect. You're in the way, so to speak. So there are these things. And he said, you know, what power does a superhero have? And then don't necessarily have a power. They may be just super smart. So he said about Bruce Wayne and Batman. He doesn't have a power. He was super smart. So that's a an aspect of it. He went round and he asked a few people, and one kid said, "Oh, my superhero has the power to control bears," and that instantly cut through and opened up a whole lot of doors inside. So controlling bears, it's fantastic. You know, I can control a bear. You have to be in a situation where there's lots of bears. This is pointed out. So if you're in New York City, which is sort of, you have these iconic places which everyone goes, yes. Sort of they have, you know, things pop up, you know, a forest, things. But if you say a shopping center or a train station, anywhere we actually do physically live is too complicated. There's car parks and sewerage stations, and I don't know. It's generally our comic area, our license to be comic is in the outback. You've got large spaces and actions don't happen. There's not mobile phone coverages and, you know, things happen a lot too quickly. That's in my view. But in the controlled bears, you instantly have the idea that you have to have a situation where there's lots of bears there or it doesn't work. And there was a talking of The Incredibles. How every Incredible had a superpower, except the people pointed out it was Jack had lots and lots of superpowers, but that was a sort of a in comic relief. It happened separately. Apparently, if you see The Incredibles, so The Incredibles is a reformulation of the comic formula. Unashamedly. Reformulation of it to look at the various aspects of it, and so to your product. So you produce shouldn't this is say a generic product that you're making shouldn't do everything. It should do one thing very well and have basically the way it does automatically suggest people guide people into where they can apply it. So have an application. So this is a broader. I think so. You can see the sort of my MBA training or my other training coming in, helping me interpret what's going on. And this is very similar to people when they come into a comic, they have training and thoughts which helps them interpret that. But they must also have a weakness. And the weakness is allows people to actually run a simulation of this and that in their head, and then there's some interest in it. So if you just have it's sort of like the accelerator and the brake, you can drive that comic through that's my terms, accelerator and brake, superpower and weakness. Weakness comes on, and so that means that person automatically has to it means having a weakness. It means that there's crisis solutions, there's a situation solution planning, and then there were certain things about, I suppose for me it was very interesting, the idea of colouring in broad colours of your comic, and sort of a minimalist colour, and the black, you apply your black outlines at the last moment. You don't do it first. If you do it first, those blacks will bleed into your colour and you won't get your colour look. Now, from a scientific point of view, I've made this on another point, having these black outlines and single colours means that you can enlarge and shrink these characters into your comic book. So if you have a complex person and they're really shrunk, they look really blurry. And so there's that. That aspect of it, and then the idea that comics are really symbols. They symbolise a person. They're not an actual representation. So a lot of the backgrounds for these are just a single line indicating a space, and there will be a, sort of like a maybe a symbol of a shed. Things won't be drawn in incredible detail. So in terms of getting towards scientific diagrams and communication, it's a step. If you could possibly draw a line between art and science, it's beginning to move a little bit along the line between in the fact that it is a symbolic language. And it was very interesting in that there's the idea of having shots and doing, you use your mobile phone to photograph a shot that you're interested in, and then you can use that as your template to sketch. The overall superhero. I suppose there's this structure of the comic, which comics. I'm sure there's a lot more in this talk, which has just sort of gone through to the keeper, or it's in there. If you talk to me, I'd get it out there. But the actual structuring of a comic book page, which I found interesting because it's relevant to web pages. That is, you've got the basic sort of like a programming language that is you like in a programming language you declare the variables, the variables have an interaction and they produce something and you see the result here at the start of the page. Very soon you introduce the key props and then the props interact and then there is something to induce someone to turn the page, a crisis, a question which gets answered on the turning of the page. I think there is this general formula is possibly the formula of some lessons or some a string of scientific experiments. That is, you talk about the scientific experiment, you produce something, and it produces a result which makes you want to do the next scientific experiment. So that's very much there. Now, going through here, I'll put this through to Darren. The points that I picked up is that I did follow some of this, and in some of the philosophy, you have to start to begin to produce a product, to get the product out there, and then you go, and for me, it's you then produce the product, and then when you produce the product, you get the difference between your world and the external world. When something's in your world, you can't communicate. You produce the product, you produce it to the external world, and you get the thing. They're not, aha, I get it, I love it. It's, I get it, I can see it's useful for so-and-so people, but you are not in the right position to produce this. It's not going forward. So there are two cartoon things that I've produced. So thanks a lot, Darren. I hope I'll send this through to you. And there's probably about 100 people overseas who will listen to this. And if you want to see more of Darren's work, go to the website www.knifeintexas, or one word, knifintexas.com. Probably .au in there if you want to get to Australia. Knife in Texas, if you just Google Knife in Texas, it will pick you up. Now the I was just thinking that we have this tendency to look for animations, and the sort of comics have gone through a whole series of things: animation, sophistication, 3D merchandising. So you've got Fred Flintstone, which is sort of morphing off. What is it? The Honeymooners? Look, various things that they've morphed off. But then they've had a revolution that they've had merchandising. So you have My Little Ponies, the Transformers. You had the merchandising to really make the money out of it. And sort of that comic universe has gone in a particular direction. And this is what's distilled. And this is the quiet, unanimated, low-cost, high-entry stuff. Getting back to there are two things. I've produced a little comic book called Baby's First Elements, and it's just simply the element symbol with whole hands, arms and legs, just the minimalist things, and then just the word underneath it of this particular thing. Now, there may be, look, there's a whole series of things. I think there is an instant market for nerdy people to buy a cloth book to give to kids, and the fact that kids can respond to shapes, but in general they need an animal. It needs to be produced, probably have an animal or something fuzzy. It needs one extra step, probably extra step in the child's space. But I've produced it, I've gone through the first step and produced it, given it to a few people that they've absolutely loved it, but it needs to be commercialized, I think. So it's Baby's First Elements, and I'll send a link through them. And another one, which is what's the problem? Lutetium. Now, essentially, people are on the there's sort of two altitudes here. So lutetium is an element. It's a rare earth element. It's very hard to, it's not hard to find. It's quite common. It's common silver, but it's mixed in with other elements, and it's chemically identical to a whole series of other elements. So it's just, you get a lot of it, but it's really hard to get out. And it's sort of a lot of interesting uses. Lutetium. Its main thing is that the element is habitually misplaced in the periodic table. It's one where a graphic person has made a decision, and then people, it's a history of people, this is the periodic table of elements, 118 elements, going from hydrogen to organism, and there's this element at a, like the actual, the periodic table you've seen is sort of like someone has murdered the periodic table and it's got a small coffin and they've put it in and they're throwing the legs in. So the periodic table should be much longer than it is. So it's murdered, and part of the hacking, they've hacked off lutetium and put it in a certain place. And so I've generated this into a problem, a crisis. That is the first day of the elements at school. And there are all these little elements walking around the place, and they have to form up. And it's the first day at school, and lutetium finds someone else standing in their place. And the chief scientist comes in and says, we don't have to live the life that we're living. We don't have to have bullies ruling. Let's move aside and let's make some space for it. It's resolved. Now, as a comic book, it's really written at two levels. A comic book is, it's sort of a little bit funny. There's people interesting. It is a bit, got some aspects of it. Probably needs to be developed a little bit more, but I'll put that through to you. So those two things I'll email off to you. Getting off to the final big issue is that there's comic science books, there's teaching conventional science through comics, and you've got the man and science, you know, the various ideas, and people being able to shrink all these things that you can do in the comic stuff. But in the quantum world, we have this, things have these amazing superpowers and, I suppose, limitations. So your quantum electron has a superpower that it has no surface, and that it can slide through other things. It can actually move through things in space. And it's got these other properties, that the lighter it gets, the bigger it gets. So these are superpowers. I don't know how you introduce characters to it, but the sort of the flip side of the coin is that the picture of the atom is a that we do at the moment from Bohr is a comic book atom. It's not a real one. It's the one which is, it's a sort of like, it's, so someone's, the comic books, the comic book of science, the original science in 1917 was the last time it was there, was a comic book science. And then we had the real science, and everyone has said, I like the comic book version of it. And essentially that's what we're teaching nowadays, the comic book version of it. So it's, that's the crisis at the moment, that tens of thousands of people a year in Australia, millions of dollars are spent just hammering a comic book rendition, a two-dimensional coloured, if you look at it, the atom as it's drawn is a comic book atom. Now the actual real atom is a real life thing, and it's sort of the human race has actually heard a lot of people down this comic book thing, and there's this intense loyalty, a fandom to this thing called the Bohr atom. However, that's okay. Unfortunately, it doesn't do anything. It's sort of like, say, if your lawnmower breaks down, you're not going to be able to dial up the phantom to do something. However, this is on that sort of idea. This is what we've got children nowadays doing. Here's the comic book atom, and here's the comic book atom. That person in that, you see in that big building, as a scientist, he's looking at that, and which is basically a lie. That at a certain point, you wave goodbye to the comic book atom and realize, oh my God, what is the whole world doing? So there is this challenge to rebirth the new atom, the replacement atom, the battle of the Worlds, the comic book Atom. So it's really much the Atom, the science we teach. There is the comic book aspects to the way we do scientific diagrams, and then it seems very natural for us to do a comic book real thing, but it's not, unfortunately. So there's a challenge that I'd like you to look at, Darren. I'll send this off to you, and what generally happens is that people in Australia just don't listen to podcasts, so I'm going to send it off to you anyway and send off the two things, and let's hope it goes there. And I'm not going to risk trying to send this off to you as a podcast, because I just know people in Australia don't listen to podcasts. They do it overseas. this funny thing. However, the aim of the podcast is, in my context, is sort of a second life, building forward, just getting your cognitive recall so you can actually not only have the memories but store them for a while and then come them out, get them to come out in context. So thanks a lot for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.